Rock and roll! I got Binky Lumba on the Capital Razor Show, my friend. I've been waiting to get you on here for a long time. So happy we're finally connected on the show. I've been on your show. I've been on your meetup. This is going to be a lot of fun. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. The Real Estate Vibe Podcast, which is your podcast. Multifamily Investor Education Summit. Capital raising. Multifamily self-storage. You do some build-to-rent stuff. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Welcome to the show, my friend. How you doing?
I'm doing really well, and I love the warm welcome, Ruben. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
I don't do a bio, but I do bring in a little bit of the stuff that we're going to talk about occasionally. Capital Razor Show, Season 3, now brought to you by Pitch Decks, our friends at Richard Wilson's company. So really happy to be working with him. Vinky, for the audience that doesn't know you, or even for the ones that have met you and seen you on social media but don't know quite enough about you yet, what can you tell them about your background and how you got into real estate investing and raising capital and stuff?
Yeah, my background is pretty generic. I think a lot of people have the similar background. I come from a strong IT background and academia. I was an IT professional and a professor, IT professor at a California State University. And I do have a prior experience in real estate in the single family. And that led me to get my realtor license, and that led me to get into the retail investments. So we were doing that quite a while with our corporate two jobs, but between the two jobs, two young kids, and a lot of travel, we couldn't handle it. So I put the real estate career on the back burner. So fast forward, a few years back, I was able to take a early retirement from my job, and I was able to step back into real estate. With a bigger vision, I would say more like a purpose-driven vision this time.
Okay, let me hear more about this purpose-driven thing. What was it? You do this because I know that you do some of it for charity and philanthropy. Tell me more about that. I'm curious about it.
So what happened was when I took the early retirement, we started traveling because I'm a world traveler. I love traveling, me and my husband both.
Love
so
it.
One time we came back from Egypt. The next morning, I woke up with this strong feeling like 3:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning, kind of epiphany. Like if I die right now, all the experiences that I've created in my life until now, all the education is going to go with me. And I did not make any difference in this life, meaning to say I did not touch any other lives than my family because I was worrying about my family or myself. So I wanted to kind of give back and make a difference to the community. Because I've been born and brought up in India, a spiritual land. It's kind of some values are instilled in me. So that bug pushed me back into real estate. I picked multifamily because it's a solid asset class. And with the solid returns, I saw the opportunity, I jumped on it. And then I thought it could fund my philanthropic work and support my charities and all the work that I'm trying to do towards women and children around the world. Right now, it's only in India, though.
Yeah, a lot of people have the mindset of, I want to make money for myself and my family, and they don't necessarily, their why and their compelling reason doesn't incorporate being of service or contribution or contributing to the world in some capacity, including philanthropy. And sometimes that may be just like, hey, I want to do all that stuff, but in order for me to help the world, I need to help myself first. And I definitely understand that philosophy. But what are some of the, I'd be very curious to hear, what are some of the charities that you are most passionate about?
So we have our own nonprofit organization. It's named on my mom and my mother-in-law, Satya Shakti, which my kids found a long time ago. But beside that, we support the local projects in India. That's run by the local NGOs over there. Because the way I look at it, these NGOs are already in place. They have the infrastructure in place. So whenever we are supporting the cause, we're sending the money, 100% goes to the cause. So nothing is spent on the infrastructure. So I don't want it to spend any money on the infrastructure. I wanted to save that cost and instead help somebody who needs it. So that's the way we are doing it right now. And we are not looking to raise any funds from anybody. For our nonprofit, we're funding all the projects ourselves. But the vision is to go global someday. And that's the reason I am looking to scale and expand big time the Lumba Investment Group, where we are helping the investors create the generational wealth. Because by investing with us, by default, these investors are helping us with the cause. So
yes.
They're kind of, by default, they are helping the community.
I love it. My wife just said that she wants to go to India. So we're going to have to put that on the vision board here and make a trip out there. She just went to Egypt. She brought me back this papyrus of this, like two lovers on there. And then like I had it on my bookshelf and my dog likes to destroy things. She got it. And so now we have to make another trip just to go get another papyrus.
Oh, I have one too. I think I have the tree of life and it's so beautiful.
Oh, nice. Very cool. All right, cool. Let's get into business. So you were into multifamily in the beginning when you got into syndication. What's been that ride like? Has your vision of the future changed at all with this crazy economic climate that we've experienced over the last 20 months or so, or maybe even less than that?
I think it's absolutely exciting ride so far and is doing really, really well. I went 2 full cycles last year, so can't complain. At a really, really good spot where I started off and where I am today, very confident about the success. And the way the market is right now, the strategy has been changed a little bit because focusing more on A or B class deals. So I'm helping out with more development deal sites because that's more strategic approach for us versus looking at C class deals. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are doing that because we think that's going to thrive. That's going to do much better than the C class.
Okay. So I've been hearing a lot of chatter and noise about all these people with bridge loans are going to suffer and there's going to be a big transfer of wealth and it's going to be the biggest transfer of all humanity and this and that. I'm not quite a believer in that as much. I know that there's definitely going to be some opportunity, but I don't know about the biggest transfer ever. I think that was in 2008 for me personally, at least in Phoenix, because you could buy units like brand new or rebuilt fourplexes for like less than $20,000 per unit. So it's crazy back then, the fire sale that we had. I don't think it'll be quite as good, that bad, depending on your perspective, as that crash. Are you doing anything in particular to forecast or stress test or do a sensitivity analysis for a upcoming real estate crash? I'm not talking about recession. I'm talking about a crash, because supposedly there's this book that they show that in the history of the last 120 years, there's a major economic crash every, on average, 18 years. And the last time we had one was in 2008. So if averages stay true in the next 4 to 10 years, we're going to have a big crash that people are not underwriting for. Do you pay attention to that at all?
Yes, I do. But we have to keep in mind that things are changing. So
always
things happen, but not the exactly the same way. So we do not know this time either which way the market is going to land or what's going to happen. But if you look at the real estate history over the 50 plus years, it's always an upward trend because it's a long-term game. It's not a short-term. So that's the reason the vision has to be different. You have to be a little bit visionary over here and see things a little bit better with a different set of glasses.
Yes.
And regarding if you wanted to compare things with the 2008, I would not necessarily agree 100% on that we're going to see the same thing, because it's a different scenario and we're in a different position. We have learned a lot. Something is called like business intelligence. We have that somewhat because we have experienced that earlier and we won't.
I'm sure 20 years ago, people were saying that too.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, if you look at the history too, it's not the exact things happen because you learn some lessons. I'm not saying that something is not going to happen. There will be something, but might not be that big. How people are speculating or just...
Overall, I think we did pretty good through the pandemic.
Exactly.
People were thinking that was going to be the end of the world. Certainly, there was a lot of devastation in terms of lives that were lost. But in terms of economic growth and stability there, it could have been much, much worse, much more of a black swan event. I thought a lot of properties actually increased in value, and even rents for some of the properties we were owning in those times, the rents actually went up during COVID because people still needed a place to live.
Yeah. And still, if you look at it, still we have so much inflation. The rents are still doing pretty well. I think it's we don't even know which way it is. Some people say we are in recession, but then there is so much inflation. There's a job growth. There's a population is still growing. So it's not 100% clear what exactly is going on. And media is spitting out all this negative news. So everybody has a different perspective on market, economic condition, or whatever. So everybody's creating their own stories. That's the way I look at it. Because wherever you're coming from, whatever platform or whatever portal or whatever your own story is, and after listening to all the media and all the news, you're cooking up your own story and trying to make that your reality.
Yeah, the media definitely has an influence on people. That's why I don't watch TV, especially not the news. I am curious about a couple of things, right? So multifamily is not the only thing that you've invested in. We'll talk a little bit more about this before we get into the education summit that you got coming up and your podcast. I want to talk about those things. I'm very curious about the self-storage and specifically in the build-to-rent stuff. I don't know. I don't think that's your core business model, but I'm very curious what your thoughts are on it, if you think it's a good opportunity right now with the current economic climate and lending calamities that are going on right now. Tell me about your perspective on those other asset classes that you invest in.
Yeah, so I invested in self-storage, building a ground-up self-storage.
Oh, that's a built one.
In Carolina's market. It's nice. About 600 units. And then the team that I'm working with, they got their hand onto this piece of land, about 6 acres or more. We got our zone for the self-storage. We started that project last year, and it's going to be done hopefully this year sometime, and we're going to lease up. That's a very good project, and then we should be able to bring good returns to our investors. Then we got our hands onto this build-to-rent community last year. We closed in December, and it's about 98 townhomes. Mm-hmm. And it's brand new. It just got built in July, and the developer was trying to sell it, and then our team got their hands onto it, and then it was actually only 20 minutes away from the other property that we closed in November. So we thought it's a really good opportunity because developer just leased up and the rents were below market, and given the situation that we are in, we're talking about the economic condition, the pandemic and all that, and people love to have some little bit their private space, and where can they go from the apartments? Built to rent community. It's a little bit bigger, more feasible, and plus brand new community, you know?
Yes.
So we thought that's a perfect opportunity, and the demographics support that, the job growth, population growth in the market, and the rents are below more, and there's rents are below market, and there's a huge delta for the rents. So I think it's a super exciting opportunity for us. We're looking for to do really well on that.
I bet you guys are probably going to crush it, especially with the kind of opportunity that you're explaining. I'm going to dive into that because I have some questions about the specific thing that these developers did, which not all developers have the same mindset, which is to just fill it and then sell it. Here's my comment. In terms of people that want to buy a house, but are waiting because their money doesn't go as far because the interest rates are higher now, and they're waiting to see if the prices come down or the interest rates come down. And sellers are not going to want to sell their houses either right now because they have great rates. And if they sell their house and move into something else, they're going to get a much higher rate and their buying dollars won't go as far. So there's kind of this lockdown where people aren't selling or buying. And if they're wanting to rent and live in a house, like you mentioned, built to rent is a great opportunity, especially if they don't want to have a neighbor. An apartment can be where you have a neighbor above you, below you, to the left of you, to the right of you, across from you. And then the other side is a little balcony and it's not a backyard. It's got no driveway, no side yard, no barbecue area. There might be some amenities, clubhouse and stuff, but built to rent has that these days too. So I think for a lot of people, they're very interested in this. Now, I've talked to a few people in the built to rent space, in the construction and development space, that do vertical four-story buildings. Sometimes that's, you have to give concessions away to get that thing filled, and you can't rent it until it's completely occupied. With built to rent, you, if you build 10 houses or 10 townhomes, you can rent them while you're building the next 10. So that's one of the things that I really love, one of the benefits of built to rent. But these developers, for the buyer of one of these communities, some of these construction guys, they only have, their business is to build. It's not to own. Mm-hmm. So they build it. They do great product. They're looking to sell, but they sell it really cheap sometimes because they need to move on to the next project where they're going to make more money. So they're not really concerned about what that property is worth. They're already focused on the next project. And that's why they'll rent it with people that are paying under market, which gives a great opportunity for somebody like Vinky to come in and purchase these subdivisions at a discount. And a major value add play where you can increase and do rents and improve the property management and take it over. So I think that's fantastic. However, The build to rent, would you ever do ground up development yourself, or are you looking for more opportunities to purchase from these developers that are ready to walk away from them?
No, actually, my team, my partner, my strategic partners that I work with all the time, they are very bullish in the Carolinas market. And then we do have a piece of land. They're looking to build to rent community there.
We need That's to talk 30, to you offline yeah. about that, because we're about to move into North Carolina. One of our partners, Tony Torres, is in North Carolina, and we're exploring new markets. We're currently in Louisiana and Alabama, but we like Texas. We like North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So maybe there'll be an opportunity for us to work together on that. We'll have to explore
yes,
that a little
course.
Bit further.
Yes, of course. That's a really hot market. I heard there's like 15 people moving on a daily basis over there.
We love migratory patterns. If there's favorable governments and an insane amount of migration, we like that for sure.
Yeah.
Especially our intent is to build these subdivisions, rent them, and then stabilize them and sell them off to an entire institution or to an institutional buyer. That's a great business model versus the building of properties to sell to individual retail buyers, which those guys are, I think, struggling a little bit more than the guys that are doing built to rent developments mm-hmm. to sell the entire thing. Anyways, so let's talk a little bit about raising capital. Any chance that I get, I'd love to give a shout out to Jerome Myers. We spoke at his Mid-Atlantic Multifamily Investing Conference with, I think, you and me and Spencer Gray were on a panel to talk about funds. Let's chat a little bit about funds and how you use funds to raise capital here before we move into a couple other things like your podcast and summit.
So I do not have the fund yet, but the goal is to start a fund this year sometime. That's what I wanted to do and trying to explore all the opportunities.
Tell us why you want to start a fund.
Because I feel like fund structure is much better when you're raising the capital, because you're raising the capital all the time and then you have a place. It's kind of a placeholder for you. And then when you have some fun going on, people trust you more. I just feel like it's more credibility as well for you.
Mm.
And then you're not raising a per deal at a time. Okay, I have a deal. Now I'm struggling for capital. I'm going to go try to raise capital now. And I'm a little bit struggling there, right? And bringing the deal, this and that. And if I'm starting a fund structure, I'm trying to figure out all the logistics. I just feel like I have some placeholder. And as long as I'm bringing the good deals in my fund all the time, it's going to be continuous. There's not going to be any struggle at any time.
And then the fund will be to invest in other operators or you as the operator?
My focus is just to stay on the capital side. I just wanted to be a capital partner with others, because the way I look at it, multifamily or built to rent, anything in real estate is just more like a team sport.
Yes.
So I don't want it to just, you
stay
know.
Stay in your lane.
Exactly. I wanted to stay in my lane and I wanted to stay in the fast lane. So I can attract multiple operators into my lane and join hands with them and be a collaborative or collective success for all.
Yeah. Now, if people ask you, well, how many of these funds have you done before? And the answer is zero. How would you deal with that objection?
Well, it does not matter. I have a track record.
Yes.
A multiple deals right there. And people see you all over. They see you, what you're doing. And they look at your journey. And then you have proven yourself already. So I'm a good place to start a fund.
Exactly. And then for people that are starting funds, if you're worried about that objection, especially if you're raising or doing a fund to fund to invest in other people's deals, you can always base your experience on the track record of the sponsor that you're raising for. Like, let's just say that you raised for somebody, Rise 48, that's got like a massive track record, or whoever it is that you go to and diversify into multiple markets. The track record of the sponsor is what counts, not necessarily how many funds you've done. Now, here's something that's very curious. I think a lot of people misconstrue. They think that if they have a fund, they're going to have all the money in there ready to go to purchase whatever it is that they want, the business model that they've attached to their fund structure. But the reality is that money is not sitting in the fund waiting to be deployed, because if it was, you'd be paying interest on it to the investors who are in there. Yes. So they give the commitments, but the money isn't really in there. Tell me about the process of getting people to wire the funds when it's time to invest in something, because you have multiple opportunities that come across your plate. How do you get people that are interested in working with you to actually getting across the finish line?
You mean from the wiring the money in, or just from the
Yeah, like let's say, hey, Vinky, my name's Ruben. I've been watching you for a while. I'd love to invest in you. And then we don't talk again for 2 months. You asked me if you found a specific deal, it's time. But like, I have my eyes on a bunch of guys. So what do you do when you have that situation? Are you looking to find my pain points, or are you looking to find why I want to invest? What kind of conversations are you having with people to get them really interested in your project and the philanthropy that could be potentially involved too? Tell me about those conversations, because I think a lot of people that are listening in, they're scaling capital raisers or want to move into active syndication and they're contemplating, what do I need to say to people to get them interested or to complete the process of investing with me?
So I'm going to say one thing over here. So when you're looking to be a capital partner with somebody, so it's not like that you just raise now and you take a pause and then you start raising again. You're raising all the time. You just have to think, you have to stay in the fast lane. That's the analogy I used before. You want to be in the fast lane all the time. You're raising all the time, whether you have a deal or you don't have a deal. Deals will come. So you need to be continuously in touch with all the investors or the potential investors or somebody you just met, maybe at a coffee shop. I don't stop raising. I just feel like everybody's an investor who's standing in front of me or standing behind me. I just pick up a conversation. Hey, how's the weather? And then start asking them, what do you do? Hey, here's my card. Ever you wanted to learn about real estate or multifamily investing, I'm here to teach you. And I push out a lot of educational stuff. I do meetups. I go to other people's meetups. I have a podcast. I'm just constantly talking to people all the time. I'm going to tell you a secret over here. My doctor told me, because I have a really bad throat now. So my doctor told me, somebody told me, you know, it could be cancer. So I went to see my doctor. I said, somebody told me because I'm coughing so much, it could be cancerous. And he said, no, I think
don't let people put that thought in your head. I hate that. That's not cool.
Glass. And I'm like, I'm talking all day long to everybody.
And even for anybody that's out there that knows somebody that has cancer, or if you ever get cancer, do a Google search on ketogenic diet. There's this thing that cancer cells feed on. It's called glucose. That glucose comes from sugar and carbs and alcohol. If you can eliminate that stuff from your diet, the cancer has nothing to eat and it just shrivels away. Look it up, guys. I'm telling you, this is a real natural cure for cancer. So anybody, just think about that. There's a bunch of other cures, like there's active hexose correlated compound, which is made from mycelia of shiitake mushrooms, that helps increase your white blood cells and your defense systems. So there's all kinds of cures, guys. Look into it. Guanabana and graviola and oxygen therapy. There's a million stuff of cures that pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know about. Look into natural cures, my friend. So that's my rant on that.
That's a good segue. I like that. Thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome. Okay, so let's talk about this Multifamily Investor Education Summit. Are you going to be talking about capital raising, different asset classes? What's the whole purpose of this? Who's going to be there? Is it virtual, in person?
Yeah, it's going to be a virtual summit. It's a two-day summit on February 25th and 26th. And if you haven't signed up already, I would like you to sign up, because it's a free summit. We are not charging anything. It's our way of giving back to the community and help our fellow investors, our potential investors, or the newbies, however you wanted to categorize anybody, you know, it's for everybody. And we're going to have 20 plus speakers, expert speakers, panel discussions, interactive sessions. We're going to have four networking sessions. It's going to give you the complete knowledge from the conception to completion. And also, I'm going to be speaking on finding the right partners or choosing the right partners. I think that's
give us a little teaser about finding partners. You don't have to give all your secrets away so people will tune in, but what are some of the things that people can contemplate when they're looking for partners? Because they're going to be married to these people for like the next, you know, the duration of the deal is.
Yeah, a long time. And I think it's a very important subject, because we always try to partner with somebody when we're trying to do a multifamily real estate deal or build to rent deal, whatever deal. We're looking for partners. Like I said earlier, it's a team sport. So finding the right partner is very crucial in this industry. And how do you find the right partner? I can give you one golden nugget over here is, whatever you're looking outside, looking within yourself first. Because what happened is we always forget who we are. And we are always outer in the world to find who we are. Like, I'm going to give you a perfect example. I was talking to somebody yesterday. He's like, people are super crazy. They're just taking multiple pictures to post on the social media. They'll take one picture, or it didn't look right. take another one. Oh, no, it's not right. They'll take 10 times their picture and finally they got the right picture to post it because they are not even happy with themselves, how they look, how they're projecting themselves, because they want to be somebody else who they are.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? So how can you find the right partner? If you don't even know yourself, how are you going to find the right partner? Tell me that.
That's very deep. That's very deep.
So please join my conference for that.
Okay, cool. What would you say to the person that's just like, hey, I've done a couple of single families. Now I have a few fourplexes. I don't want to have a partner because like, I don't like people because now I have to put my trust into them. And I don't know if I can find the right person. Multifamily investors, they don't grow on trees. I don't know if I can find the right partner. What kind of a mindset is this? What can you advise them or what input do you have?
There are people, they just wanted to do it themselves. People like to do things themselves. If you think you have the capacity to do it yourself, you have a big company, you have trillions of dollars, and you can hire like hundreds of people to work for you, and then you're doing it everything yourself, go ahead and do that. But look at the bigger picture. You have so many people working for you. You're telling them what to do, but they're still doing it. It's still a team. But here where you're starting off and you're finding some partners to work together because you are leveraging, you're delegating. You do not know everything yourself. So you're leveraging other people's knowledge and coming as a team to do it. So I would say by the end of the day, if you wanted to syndicate or if you wanted to be successful in the real estate game, do it as a team. I would say when you collaborate, you go farther, faster, or your success is bigger than individual success. Because when you're doing it by yourself, just think about it. You're in your own bubble. You can do only this much. If you're not a billionaire, trillionaire, you can do only this much because you cannot buy all that team or the right resources around you. So you're going to do only so much. You're going to grow this much only because that's what the capacity is. But when you're going to bring the other bubbles or the other minds around you who are knowledgeable, and they who can move the needle together, you're going to be scaling at the exponential level.
Yeah. If you compare taking down a 40 unit with like two or three people and a couple of passive investors, a very small syndication, and you compare that with a 400 unit with multiple partners, multiple property managers, multiple capital partners, and a lot of other visionaries and construction managers, the amount of work that you put in is going to be much less on the 400 unit, even though you're going to get a smaller piece. You're going to have greater momentum, more scalability. Guys, when you're seeking partners, don't seek people. Here's my other piece of input that I'd like to invite you to listen to, which is don't pick somebody that's at the same level as you. Pick somebody that's got like multiple cycles under their belt or multiple units that you can lean on heavily for their track record, instead of finding somebody that's like you, that's only done like 20 units or something. It's going to be much harder to scale. You're going to run out of money faster and you're not going to have the same amount of systems and ability to do all kinds of things. So highly recommend and encourage people go after and find somebody. Here's a good question to ask somebody if you want to figure out how to add value to them is ask them, if you were to 10X your business, what's preventing you from doing that? And then they will open up, just be like, oh, well, I would need more capital. I would need a bigger property manager. I need some guys that help me with development and interior design. And then if they mention anything that you are good at, that's where you can find your way into working with them instead of just being all like, hey, how can I add value to you? Dude, people can't dissect you as a person and know exactly what skills you have. You have to do it the other way around, guys. So that's something I want to mention. So definitely sign up, guys, for the Multifamily Investor Education Summit. Really looking forward to this. Just real quick, I'll give you a chance to tell us how do you sign up for that at the after the lightning round, but where can they get more information on that and sign up?
Just go to multifamilyinvestoreducationsummit.com and sign up there. You'll be able to see the line of speakers there. And it's going to be the ultimate summit.
Woo. Anyone in particular that you would like to mention they're going to be a speaker there?
There's going to be a bunch of people. There's going to be Dan Hanford. There's going to be Rob Beardsley.
Sweet.
Also, then we have Michael Flight on blockchain. Nice. We have Shannon Robner. He's going to be talking about blockchain because that's a new technology. Wanted to cover that. And we do have Mike and a couple others who's going to be talking about how podcasting can help you grow your database for your clients like investors and all the, you're also connecting with the top-notch industry leaders when you have a podcast. So how to scale your business from there. And also we have a Zach Happenstall there, Kim Lisa Taylor, multiple names.
Fantastic,
you know?
Lori. Yeah, wow.
You can't even stop me when I started, you know.
Okay, cool. So you mentioned podcasting. Someone's going to be speaking about that. Tell us about your podcast, The Real Estate Vibe. I've been a presenter there, or a guest, I should say.
Yes, you were a guest on my podcast. My podcast is, I would say, all about success stories or mindset in commercial real estate, I would say. So I bring the top-notch industry leaders there and talk to them and learn from them. And I feel like this is my way of growing and scaling because I get to talk to the top-notch people. Actually, I commented on one of the LinkedIn posts that somebody put it out there. Whose podcast you like it better? I'm like, I love all of them. But here's mine too, because the thing is, you cannot pick one over the other. It's all about you, how you resonate with somebody, or what your vision is, what your goal is. It's not like that my podcast is going to be totally different than Ruben's or anybody else in the industry. It could be my vision is a little bit different than Ruben, mm-hmm. or maybe my strategic direction is a little bit different than Ruben. And then my audience who is tuning into my podcast, maybe they resonate with me. And maybe some of them, they just resonate with Ruben, how he handles his show or what kind of celebrities he brings on his show. And they're adding value to them.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, because I remember you were asking me some very challenging questions about like, how much do you get paid percentage-wise in the deal within the fund structure if it's set up this way? And I'm like, damn, she's going deep into the weeds. When you have other guests on there, do you go really deep into that? Because I really like that. I enjoy being challenged. But I can't imagine, I've interviewed some people on my show and they do not like to be challenged or ask the hard questions. They just kind of want to be this figure on stage that just kind of gives you the 30,000 foot view and doesn't really dive deep. There's no learning in that, right, guys? I like that.
You know, thank you so much for asking that question. And you're doing very well job in your podcast, Ruben. You have maybe in the top number one line already for your podcast. You're doing really well. So I dig deeper a little bit because the thing is I wanted to add value to the newbies who are coming to the industry and wanted them to kind of understand the concept. So my vision is not like that I wanted to put somebody in the spot and dig deeper or ask the deeper questions. The reason is just like when I'm asking that question, it creates a thought in some listener's mind.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's something they didn't think about that before. So you know how their success journey is going to change altogether.
Yeah.
That's what the whole idea behind that podcast is.
Yeah, you can separate and distinguish who the marketing guys are and who are the real syndicators by asking them some questions. So
exactly.
I like doing that too. So I get it. And I think the audience appreciates it. And this our shows are specifically for adding value to the audience. So I hope you guys appreciate that because it can be challenging. Sometimes you're burning a little bit of a bridge when you ask people and sometimes you just like, hey, I don't want to burn that bridge. I'd like my guests to come back. So maybe I'll just take it easy. So you have to find that right balance. Anyways, cool. So check out The Real Estate Vibe. Let's jump into the lightning round. I got some questions for you. How about we start with this? What's the best vacation you've ever taken?
Europe. I love Europe. Mm-hmm. I love many places in Europe. I think the best place I visited was Monaco. And I really love that. Those luxurious yachts and I don't know, it was so much fun. Enjoyed that.
Amazing. Favorite book of any kind?
I always recommend the book. It's called Flow.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
It's by a professor, Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. It's on human psychology.
Nice. So
it's like how you can use your optimum potential because everybody has the same potential. It's like how you tap into that knowledge.
I'll check that out. I've been going back through a lot of my episodes and when I hear somebody recommend a book, I go and pick it up now. And I picked up like 40 books just this year in 2023. And I've gone through like about 8 or 9 of them already. So I'm like on a craze right now, just absorbing voraciously as much content as I can get. So I invite you guys to do the same. How about this? How much of your success do you attribute to your mindset?
I would say 100%.
Let me ask you the same question in a different way. Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
I would say 100%. Yeah, the reason I say it, because if you are spiritually aligned, your mind, body, soul is aligned, you are able to see bigger and better. You can see beyond the average person is seeing. And it's all about opening up your mind. And my mind is in the receiving mode and the giving mode. So I wanted to give out more than I take. That's my philosophy in life. All through my life, I've been doing that. And then I'm always open to receiving. I very hardly say no to anything. If something comes my way, I wanted to say no, I stop myself. I say, no, let me figure out what it is. Let me understand the situation or whatever it is, and then decide whether I wanted to take this opportunity or no. So I do not block myself. And that all happens having the right mindset. It takes years of practice to get you that level. That's what I have to say, you know, because it's so much conditioning. When you're born, up to 7 years of age, all the conditioning is done, believe me or not.
That's true.
Because the family that you grew up, where you were born, your parents, your friends, your outer circle, they just shape you. And rest of the life, you're just following the same patterns.
Guys, I got to tell you, my wife and I have been diving deep into this particular topic because we are all wounded. Children, our inner child. And like, we've been exploring how people raise their children and the communication that they have. And the effect that parents have on their children, because if you treat them a certain way or say certain things to them or punish them in certain ways, those become things that they remember for their life, and they have survival patterns and way that they need to deal with this kind of rejection, abandonment, and other issues that they have. So we've been really diving because we want to have kids and we want to make sure that our kids really get like the most endowed spiritual and business and development philosophies that we can possibly endow them with, right? So we're really excited to explore that further. Do you have anything to say on that before we move on?
No, I think you said it very precisely. It's very important, like how we handle our kids. And then, and it's not to the parents, because all the parents, they do the best possible job.
Yes.
But they can do only as much they know. Nobody wants anything wrong for their kids. They want the best. They wanted to bring up their kids like princess or princesses. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, they only do as much as they know. So for the parents, they need to work on themselves. They need to increase their perceptions in order to bring the better generation. That's what I have to say.
I love it. How long do you want to live?
Not very long.
What? Have I asked you this before?
No, but I think I am happy. I'm at a very happy space right now. So it's just like when you're happy and when you exit, it's good. I don't want it to live a miserable life. I'm a very, very happy, very contented person. And I'm at a very good place to help so many people around me, whether it's a wealth generation or if bringing a food on the table for somebody. I love to do that. I love to add value to other people's life. So I'm at a very good place. So I'm not scared of dying. And if I leave right now, I'll be super happy. But the only thing I want is when I exit my body, I want it to be fully conscious. I don't know if you heard that before or no.
Sure.
I just don't want it to leave just like that. I don't know and end up don't know, because I believe in afterlife, because I'm Hindu. I'm from India. So we believe in multiple lives. We had maybe multiple lifetimes before this life as well. So the only one thing I want is I just want it to be fully conscious when I exit. That's cool.
So I believe, because I have a degree in chemistry, we studied energy and the first law of thermodynamics. I believe that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. And I do believe that the spirit that we're made of is made of energy. And
it's
that
all energy.
And if it can't be created or destroyed, then where was it before Reuben Greth? And where will it be after Reuben Greth? It's not going to disappear. It cannot be created nor destroyed. Just kind of my thoughts on that. Best way to raise capital from your perspective.
Make relationships. Strong trust relationships with people, because I tell everybody, whosoever comes to my energy field, that's the analogy I'm going to use, because you have to raise your vibrations to a level that you're attracting the right kind of energy into your energy field. So I just give out the message that I am in the relationship building business. I'm not in the transactional business. I'm not going to disappear after taking your money. I'm going to be here lifetime for you.
Love it. Build
strong relationships. Money will follow. Don't chase money. If you chase money, money's going to run away. I don't chase money. I'd rather money chase me.
Yes.
I like that.
That's fantastic. How about this? Biggest difference between who you are now and who you were when you were younger or in high school?
When I was younger, not that open. I was spiritual. Like I told you, I'm born and brought up in a spiritual land, spiritual country. But I did not know who I was. I was Winky Lumba at that time. Winky Diwan, that was my maiden name. But I just feel like I'm more than that now, because I took the inner journey and I figured out we are much more than what we physically see ourselves, or we just assume who we are. everybody has a much bigger potential than they think of themselves.
100%. What do you love best about multifamily investing?
Multifamily investing is hands-free if you're doing a syndication model, and it makes a lot of people financially free who are investing. They can keep their primary jobs and they can make their money for them. Why work so hard? Work smart. That's called smart working when you're utilizing the resources around you.
What do you love best about traveling?
Traveling is just like opens up your mind. You get to see in the world what's happening and learning about other cultures, mm-hmm. other people. Guess what? They are not so different than you. Everybody is the same energy vibrating at a different wavelength.
Okay, so tell me about the cooking that you do. How does it help you?
Cooking is kind of a meditation for me. No matter how tired I am, when I go to my kitchen, I can cook anything, and I'm a really, really good cook. Believe me or not, when I was young, my mom never taught me how to cook because my parents' focus was go to school, get your degree, become professor. And I have an MPhil from India, and I did my executive MBA here in US. But their focus was never cooking because they thought you can make so much money, you can hire somebody to cook for yourself. But when I came to this country, I learned how to cook, and I cook all cuisines. But what I found is it's like very meditative, and yes. It's fulfilling experience for me when I'm feeding people around me and they praise my food. They love the food. So it's just like it gives me happiness that they are feeling happy or they're enjoying something that I created.
Yeah, guys, there's this thing called passive meditation. If you can find an activity that takes you out of the city or out of the business that you're in or anything that distracts you, that is a form of relieving your brain from being focused on syndicating real estate or whatever your business is. For me, that activity is snowboarding. I don't think about anything other than like how to avoid the tree that I'm kind of going through when I'm snowboarding. So find an activity that does that. And that is a form of meditation. How about this? Two more questions. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
I did, actually. That's what changed my trajectory. Yes.
What was that?
I think around 2008 or 2010, I came back from India and I was diagnosed with acute liver failure. And then I was hospitalized. I was at the verge of getting a liver transplant. But then all of a sudden, something happened. I saw some lights, whatever. I was in the zone for a few minutes, like say 5 to 7 minutes. When I came back to my senses, all my numbers started changing and I was back to recovery. And doctors thought it was a miracle. I didn't get no liver transplant, no nothing. I came back home after 15 days in hospital and liver started recuperating itself. From then, I just got a really big shock that because my mind and my body took a toll on all this thing. And my mind was running like 100 miles speed at the time, trying to figure out what happened. And then I started seeing beyond this physicality, a peek into something else. And that was not part of my experience ever before. So that put me on the trajectory to find out who am I, why I'm here, and what can I do to make this world a different place for me or my surroundings.
That's amazing. If you guys want to hear more stories like that, I highly recommend Joe Dispenza's book, The Placebo Effect. I love that story. But you can heal yourself just using your brain and connecting with infinite intelligence, guys. I believe this is true. Go Google it yourself, my young crux. How about this? What impact? This is brought to you by Shannon Amigo. Last question of the day. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
I made a decision for myself very early on that I don't want to come in the world and leave that nobody knows who I am. So the way I wanted to create an impact is I wanted to touch 1 million lives in a meaningful way. So I'm leaving a legacy. When I'm gone, people still remember who Winky Lumba was. And whether it's helping somebody financially or helping somebody generating wealth or preserving wealth, whatever way I can add value to somebody's life or picking up all these projects geared towards women and children globally, that's gonna create a difference, a big time difference. Because it's not only I'm giving them food or clothing or pregnancy kits or whatever we're trying to do. It's just like when I'm bringing the next meal on the table, I'm trying to create a little space in their mind that they're not worried about the food for the next meal. Instead, they're thinking, well, how can I make my life better?
I love it. We went down the rabbit hole in that lightning round. That was fun. Okay, shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star review. Shout out to Legacy Acquisitions and our sponsors, Good Egg Investment Syndication Pro, PitchDecks.com, and the Family Office Club. Check out some of those great offers that they have at CapitalRaiserShow.com. Vinky, how does the audience get a hold of you?
Well, I'm all over the social media. The best way to connect with me is I'll connect with me on LinkedIn, or you can go to my website, LumbaInvest.com. I have a podcast, The Real Estate Vibe, that we talked about earlier. Please tune into that. Leave me a review and comments. I would love that.
Very good stuff. Any last words of wisdom for the aspiring syndicator or capital raiser as they move forward in their journey?
Best advice I can give is just be authentic, be who you are, find you are who you are, and then connect with people at that level. Don't pretend, because people can read through you. Trust me or not, that's the right thing to do, because people can see through you. And I wanted to again say, please join us for our summit on February 25th and 26th. And it's totally free. We're not charging any money. And we wanted to give back to the community where we got so much from. So please join us for the wonderful 2-day session with multiple speakers, multiple opportunities to make new connections.
Multifamily Investor Education Summit.com, guys. Go check it out. I'll definitely be there.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, this has been a blast, Vinky. Definitely going to have you back on. This is so much fun. I can't believe the show's already over. We could talk probably in another couple hours, but this has been a blast. Thank you so much for coming on, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much for having me on your show, Ruben.
You're welcome.